And there's a lot of things on the table, but I think one of the possibilities is that we end up just being an AI company, which I think is kind of the reality for a lot of startups right now. Anyone not leveraging AI, at least in some capacity, is definitely at a disadvantage. And for all of those companies, it's looking a lot like everyone is just going to become an AI company in the end.
Why did you guys decide to go in this direction of building it's kind of like IDE, but specifically for auditing?
Yeah, so the idea of it was really born out of the friction that I saw coming into the space. So my background is in security in the Web2 space. I did that for 8 years before we started Audit Wizard. And my last job was at Apple, actually, on their cryptography team. So I'd done in that time a lot of audits and a lot of security work and research. So it's kind of accustomed to a certain way of doing things. It's very structured. It came into Web3 and there was not a lot of structure to things. Tooling wasn't super well developed. It was kind of getting there, and there's some open source tools, but in terms of security, I found things quite lacking. And I think even in kind of the Web2 world, there were things that I wanted to have but didn't. And the biggest problem for me was I was using developer tools to do security engineering work, which always felt a little bit clunky. Like, I don't really need to edit the code. I don't really need, GitHub Copilot or all these other things to help me write stuff. I need help things to help me understand code. I need tools that give me insights. I need to be able to run scanning tools really easily without, having to set things up, otherwise it might not be worth it to even click the button. So that's where we decided we wanted to build a platform, because I was doing some audits at the time, just kind of freelance, and I really didn't want to continue without some of this quality of life stuff that I felt was super necessary. So I was like, let me put that on hold. I want to build something to solve these problems first, and then maybe, who knows, maybe one day I'll go back to auditing.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you made this interesting distinction that we use those developer tools to do security work. And that never even came to my mind before. And now that you said it, it's so obvious, the lack of proper tools to do what we do is probably, sorry, it's probably such a staggering difference from what we actually need. And you mentioned that you wanted a tool that could run some tests and things like that. So is that something you plan to implement in Audit Wizard, like running testing suites for the projects or fuzzy integrated or something like this as well?
Yeah, we have plans to add a lot of things. Basically, our vision is to make Audit Wizard this singular place, this one-stop shop for you to do everything you need to do while you're auditing code. Testing is definitely top of mind for us. It's something we're working on right now, actually. I think that we're kind of taking a step back, and looking at auditing as a whole and identifying, like, what's the most impactful thing to do, right? Testing is definitely one of those top ones. But also there's things like, looking at the storage slot layout, figuring out the on-chain variables, maybe running Pyrometer or some symbolic execution thing, and understanding more things about the code. So our priority right now is definitely to ship some more core features, testing definitely being one of those, and allowing people not just the ability to run a test, but like the agility to have just like a snippet of Solidity code and say, like, well, what would happen if I just threw this in there, or maybe change like a line of code and then run the whole contract in just like a couple seconds and say, well, what would that change in the structure here? And then maybe look at my insights and see that cascading flow there. But yeah, I think there's a lot to come, and I think there's really a lot of things to add to this platform, so it can be the one and only thing you have to have open, the only tool you really need to do audit work.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. And now, just from hearing you talk, I realize that sometimes being able to edit the code is actually beneficial because you can test little things, little hypotheses. So, is that something that you guys also think is going to be able to be implemented, or something you guys already have in mind?
That's a good question. It's tough because we started building with this very specific goal in mind that you would never really touch the code. And that's kind of how we designed our whole IDE, right? I feel pretty strongly that as an auditor, there are certain reasons why I might want to edit block of text that I'm looking at that has the code in it, right? To leave some notes, to highlight some things. Maybe I want to make some changes. But I think commingling all of that into one experience can get quite messy, especially when you are auditing something and you need to have your audit work, reflected in a certain snapshot of code. And if you make any edits, maybe you forget about it. If you're collaborating with other people, maybe they make a change and they're just testing something and you're like, oh, that looks like a vulnerability. So I think there's a lot of nuance to just allowing people to edit the code. We're still trying to figure out the correct way of doing that. It might be like a mode where you can toggle on and it is like a slightly different view. Maybe you want to send that edited code through some of our flows, through some of our tools. Maybe you don't. So figuring out how that's going to work is still a challenge for us, but yes, we're gonna be adding the ability to edit the code at least in some capacity. And that said, one thing we are adding will be the ability to write your own tests, right? As I said, you'll be able to run tests, but we'll also have like a little notepad where you can create them, and maybe we'll have some templates or have AI help you with that.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think the way you described one of the possibilities on how to edit the code is definitely something that I had in mind. Maybe you can do kind of like a separate REPL, so to speak, with your changes, and then you have like the official one and the edited one. Do you have like a mind map of priorities, or just different areas where this software needs to, like, the main areas that you guys focus on when you're developing and think about new features? Because I think this is interesting to take it from this perspective where you have all these things that we do as auditors. Is that something you guys do?
Yeah, I'll let Joe touch more on this if he wants, but I think we almost have like a two-step, roadmap and release process where it's like the first step is kind of us getting together as a team and deciding what we think is the most important, and how to prioritize that. But then secondly, always just going to people that use Audit Wizard, and talking to auditors themselves and kind of sharing that roadmap with them and then seeing like, did we miss anything? Is something prioritized over something else? And really driving decisions from what, our users want for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to go about it. And do you run formal interviews, or is it just kind of like a brainstorming exercise and maybe picking someone's brains every now and then?
Yeah, I would say it's a mix of both. Like definitely like to talk to our users as much as possible and even, sit down on a call when I get the opportunity to. But then, we also have our Twitter and Discord where people are popping in and, sharing quick thoughts, suggesting fixes, things like that. So it's really a nice mix of both, which we appreciate.
Yeah, that's cool. And is the plan for the tool to remain like open source to everyone, free for everyone, or do you guys intend to implement some type of charging at some point? What is the business model you guys have in mind?
Yeah, so since we released Audit Wizard, everything's been free. And what we have right now, the base version, we plan to remain free. But in the future, there's a lot of exciting features that we want to add that we'll put under a pro plan. But for right now, I think the focus is building the best tool possible and letting everyone use it. I think that's what we're really focused on.
Right, so you think it's gonna be kind of like the premium sort of service where you get the bulk of the tool for free, and then if you want the extra features, then you subscribe to a pro plan kind of thing.
Yeah, and always, having that free baseline is definitely important to us.
Yeah, that's cool. And what is the, if you guys had all the features implemented and everything, what is the ultimate vision for the tool?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I feel like it's hard for us to even look, 1 or 2 months in the future. As Brendan said, we kind of had this, customer feedback loop, flywheel going, and that's really all we operate on. And zooming out in the long-term horizon, there's just so many things we want to put into this platform and so much potential. I'm sure not all of them will make it in, but I think it would be hard to say when we're actually even done adding features, because it seems like there's always something more we can do. I think to start, our strategy is providing all these features that you kind of know and love and can't do without. And once we have all that in place, building on top of that, new experiences, new ways to look at code, new ways to maybe visualize it. Things to help you, like if you want to test a certain thing, or you want to marry two things together, like Slither results. You want maybe to pipe those through the AI or something, and it can do maybe a first pass at looking at what might be a false positive, something like that. I think there's a lot of potential to unlock these high level experiences, just kind of chaining things together. And I think beyond that, there's a lot of innovative features we want to develop as well. Nothing to really talk about now. We've had some ideas that we've discussed internally, but again, those things like maybe a year or two away, and it's kind of hard to look that far in the future. But hopefully we can put some of this stuff out there, which I think will be really impressive. And I've been doing auditing work for a really long time, and I've always thought that, it's crazy. Why doesn't someone build something that does this really interesting thing? And I never really see it. So I think there's a lot of cool experiences out there that auditors and security people and even devs want, but don't know that they want, right? Because it doesn't really exist right now. So in the future, we're looking forward to, kind of making that our focus, bringing new things to the table that are really exciting.
Well, can you give us a little bit of a foreshadowing to what those things could look like potentially? Because I'm cu very curious to know what kind of things you have in mind now.
Yeah, I can give you a little taste. We actually did a hackathon in New York. I think it was last month at the ETH Global New York conference, and what we built there was something definitely innovative, I think, where we named it Spyglass. But essentially what it does is it allows you to write these static code analysis rules without having to really tinker with the underlying engine, right? So anyone who's ever looked at Slither knows there's a certain set of detectors that it runs, and you can add your own detectors, right? There's a really well-known extension called Slytherin from the pessimistic guys, but it's kind of complicated. Like, you have to go and learn Slither and figure out what the syntax is and how you're going to interact with it, and then you create a repo, and then you kind of go share that with other people. Then every time you want to run it, you're still running Slither and attaching your thing. So it's a little bit of work, a little bit of overhead. So we built basically a system to take all that away from you, and all you have to do is write the logic. And in addition to that, you can sort of chain things together. So we were thinking that you can have a Slither rule, or like walk the abstract syntax tree of the code, the AST, find a pattern, maybe then chain that with AI and ask the AI a question about the project, like, hey, does this project use an Oracle? Okay, then this finding from the AST is even more valid, and then maybe I pair that with something from Slither, right? So there's a lot of power that unlocks, but also a lot of ease of use because you don't have to think about how these things work under the hood. You just write the logic and we handle it for you. So that's something that we might be bringing to Audit Wizard. Again, that was sort of like a prototype that we built at a hackathon, but innovative stuff like that, that there's nothing really out there, is I think something we want to focus on.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm more curious now to see what else you have going on. I feel like that would be so cool for exploration and just trying to really get a good grasp of the code, like a quick overview of what might be going on and things like that. So yeah, that makes me really excited to see what else you guys have cooking up. And sorry, do you guys are just bootstrapping all this? Did you get funding?
Yeah, so our team is funded. There's about five of us right now. So there's Joe and I who are co-founders. Joe's the CEO. I'm COO. We have our lead developer, Aiden, who's also been with us from the start, our head of design, Tom, and then another developer in our team, Sam. So small, lean team, but yeah.
Cool. And how's the process of raising?
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting part of the company. In like the journey. Yeah, I don't know if you had any specific questions on that. I mean, it's definitely a long process.
Well, given the timeline, I assume you guys would be trying to raise when the bear market kind of hit, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, definitely. I think we used to joke about how within months of Joe and I meeting, there was like 3AC collapsed, FTX went down. So it was pretty bearish, for raising. But our lead investor, Six Man Ventures, they've been great to work with. I think they really understood our value prop, from the very start, and take security pretty seriously. So it was a difficult journey, but all in all, I think it took us like 3 months to really wrap that entire process.
Yeah, like cool. And is this your first startup or not really? Do you guys have any experience with working in private startups as well?
Yeah, so for me personally, I got into the startup game and like Web3 at the same time. In early 2020, I worked for a DeFi protocol called Cryptex Finance, and kind of worked with them from, pre-product through the launch. So I think I learned a lot about the startup experience there. And then after that, I worked at Filecoin for a bit, which is obviously a more established organization. So I think I have experience in both. And then, before that, just on my own, a few different side projects with, Aiden, who's on our team. We built a few different mobile games together, things like that.
Yeah, and for me it was my first step into something like this. I had just been a technical guy kind of behind the scenes for a really long time. And actually, when we first started, I kind of had it in mind that maybe we could set this up so I could just build and not have to think about anything else. And back in when we first met, one of the first iterations we had of our idea was actually to make it a public good. We were actually kind of trying to avoid becoming a business, but we quickly realized that with the scale of this thing and the innovation and power we wanted to bring to the whole platform, the things we had planned, it just wasn't going to be possible unless we, created a company around it, got funding, established a team. There was no way we were going to build it, just kind of two people and after work, just hacking away at it. So it was kind of a forcing function there, but now kind of I think everyone's really grown into it and we've got a really solid team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that being said, I was just going to say real quick, with that being said, everyone definitely put in a ton of hours after work before we got funded. I think we worked on it for almost a year pre-funding.
Oh wow, yeah, that's a lot. But I think you guys definitely going in the right direction, because ultimately, if you're a company, you can push the best product you can possibly. Whereas if you're public good, you're so much more limited. And for what you guys have in mind, I feel like we want the best product, right? I feel like the difference between what could be and what, let's say, is, or like, the minor version, it's like really drastic. So I'm really glad you guys took that path in that sense. And one of the things that I found interesting is that it kind of like you have the AI embedded in the tool. One question is, what AI are you guys using for that at the moment? Are you just using ChatGPT, or are you guys using some other model?
Yeah, it's just GPT-4 right now, just LLM based, and so that's why we kind of keep our AI features contained to the language stuff that it's good at, interpreting code, maybe suggesting some code, helping you threat model and ideate things. We haven't really applied AI within our tool yet to do things like actually find vulnerabilities, or anything else like that, more technical. I think there's a future that we're looking at. You asked earlier what would be kind of the end state of our company, and there's a lot of things on the table, but I think one of the possibilities is that we end up just being an AI company, which I think is kind of the reality for a lot of startups right now. The anyone not leveraging AI, at least in some capacity, is definitely at a disadvantage. And for all of those companies, it's looking a lot like everyone is just going to become an AI company in the end. So that definitely may be the direction we head in. But for right now, we're keeping it simple, and we're kind of seeing how AI develops and just making sure we're incorporating, the cutting edge of AI into Audit Wizard.
Yeah, I think that's a funny terminology that everyone's gonna become an AI company. For me, it's the same kind of thing of saying, oh, every software company is gonna become a coding company in a way, if it makes sense. It's just like an extension of of programming that is just so ubiquitous. Why not? Why wouldn't you use it if you can benefit your program in some way? And in most cases, because most things are dealing with like AI solvable problems, it is something that should be used. But on the other hand as well, I think sometimes it can hurt some products. Like right now, AI could be used to like have a lot of false submissions to audit contests and things like that. And I think having this in a tool like yours definitely incentivizes it. So it's not always, a good thing, but on the other hand, you have all these benefits. So is that something that you guys think about? Maybe because it's such in a early stage and it can't really be trusted too well, it can also give devs, or specifically more junior devs, a false sense of security in their code. For example, they just try the tool out and the ChatGPT says that here looks to be fine or something like this. Is that something that you guys worry about that could mislead potential users, even though this is targeted to, more experienced auditors? Everyone's gonna use the tool eventually.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with the advent of GPT-3 and 4 really, there was a lot of criticism in the Web3 security space about and criticism and analysis, like can AI actually be used to find vulnerabilities? Can it be used to perform audits? And the overwhelming majority consensus was no. There's a lot of things it's not good at. And finding discrete vulnerabilities with a high level of confidence is definitely one of those. That's something we're really aware of, and from the beginning, that's why we've kind of steered away from using AI to, especially an untrained AI, right, to find specific vulnerabilities or tell you if your code is secure or not. I think when you look at what AI really is. It's just, it's a probabilistic, machine, right? You give it an input and it gives you something analogous to an answer. So the methods for determining the correctness of something are not there, right? It needs this extra layer of filtering, or it needs this other way of operating that just using an LLM is not suited for. So for us, we've kind of stuck to those things it is good for and made sure that we build the experience with the user kind of around that. So you can chat with AI, you can ask it to give you an analysis of the code, but at no point are we like, here's everything the AI, all the vulnerabilities it thinks are in the code, and if it didn't find something, then it's not there, right? Like that's not not something we're saying in the platform. We're keeping it simple and sticking to what we know the AI can actually achieve.
So, how do you recommend people actually use it?
Yeah, so I for me there's two things I've always used AI for in not just auditing but any application. One is just understanding. Like if I lack the knowledge of something, I can either search Google or I can just ask the AI and the AI will kind of understand me better than a search engine will. But also, right, when you're looking to audit something, there's a lot of complex code that you need to digest, and the quicker you can do that, the quicker you can, get to the actual audit work. And my strategy before AI used to be read every line of code and take notes and summarize what each kind of unit of code did, each like function, each class, each file, and then I'd have an overall view of everything that would happen in this project. And with the advent of AI and the ability for it to read code, you can just have it generate that almost instantly. So now something that would take me if I had like a 3 week audit, I'd spend the first week doing that. Something that would take me that whole week, I can just wait a few minutes and have AI do all of that for me. So that's one, and that's how we kind of apply it to AutoWizard. You can get a description of what the code does and some insights on the security, like what the AI might think is now a focus area for you in your audit. And so the second part, beyond just kind of the knowledge check, is ideation of various things. Like if I'm trying to come up with something in my life, like I don't know, a name for something creative, right? I might ask AI to give me a bunch of different random names. Like, here's what the thing is. What do you think I should name it? And it can throw out a bunch of ideas, and then I can just focus on filtering those out. And I think that's a really hard part is sort of the randomness of coming up with an idea, especially if you want to have different, diverse, and unique perspectives. It's hard as a human to replicate that, but AI is really good at it. But what it's not good at is filtering things out. So you can let the AI do the thing that's hard for you, and you do the thing that's hard for the AI. So that's the other approach we're taking. One of our very first iterations of our like alpha release, I wanted to put in a threat modeling tool. Initially, we took it out because it was a little too close to finding vulnerabilities, and we weren't sure how people were going to use it. But basically, what it did was the AI would come up with a bunch of different high-level threats and sort of focus areas, and say, this possibly vulnerable to reentrancy, possibly vulnerable to like an Oracle attack. And obviously, you need some more context. But if you think about the AI as being like an assistant helping you threat model, I think there's a pretty big impact you can get from, just having it come up with a list of threats, and then you filter down and say, okay, now I'm gonna work on validating these things.
Yeah, I think there's something to the manual process of going through the code and taking the notes yourself. I think that if you just do that through an AI, you miss something in the process, like in that outsourcing of looking for the code. So I'm not sure if it saves that much time in the long run, because eventually they're going to have to become really familiar with the code. But I guess when you're just trying to like get out of the overwhelming stage, it helps a lot for sure. And you just mentioned this threat modeling too, that you said it was too close to finding vulnerabilities. Isn't that a good thing? Wouldn't this be more of a motivation to put it out? Why did you guys decide to not use it?
I think it is something we will revisit. We just wanted to engineer it and present it in the right way. And also I think there's some need to kind of train it specifically, right? So yeah,
I think
I
with,
was sorry, yes, jump in, Brennan.
yeah, I was just gonna say, I think it just goes back to our original thesis on AI, which is use it for what it's good for, and we're not gonna ship anything that, touches AI that we don't feel like very strongly confidently about, or feel strongly confident that it's gonna like empower, security engineers. And as far as understanding the code base, I think, like, yeah, that definitely takes time, and it's definitely step one to performing your audit. But we have a lot of different users, right? Like, some people only participate in Code Arena contests, and are always on a tight, schedule. So AI can really, really empower people when they're under those time constraints.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing I wanted to bring up was I wasn't confident that a lot of people in the Web3 space, especially a lot of the people getting started, really understood the difference between what a threat was and what a vulnerability was. And I was afraid that if we just kind of hooked up AI to this thing, we might get, Code Arena, Sherlock, Immunify knocking on our doors, saying like, why am I getting all these like crappy, clearly from GPT-4, responses that I had to filter out. So we didn't see it as like a net add to the space or for the users, at least at the time. There's a certain way to present it that kind of needs to be engineered still.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense, and it sounds like a very sensible decision. Can you outline the difference between a vulnerability and a threat for us, please?
I love that question. I spent a lot of time, in my Web2 career, kind of researching this, these topics. The difference between a threat and a vulnerability is that a threat is kind of a precursor to a vulnerability or finding. When I do an audit, what my process is, I start with understanding the code base, getting familiar with it. And then the second part is building out this threat model. I kind of talked about that threat modeling tool already, but you basically ideate what could possibly go wrong. And the idea is to get an exhaustive list of every potential scenario, regardless of if you think it applies or not, right? Like, if it has an oracle, even if the Oracle has some security guarantees, you put them in as a threat anyway, because like, what if those are broken, or what if those assumptions are invalid or fail or something? It's basically a threat is a potential vulnerability, right? And then you go and you kind of explore all the ways that a threat could materialize, and if you find one that's valid, a valid path to exploiting the thing at risk. Right, then that becomes then a finding. But I see threats as kind of the work plan, if you will. When I start an audit, I build out a whole list of them, and once I've gone through all of them, I know I'm done with the audit. But I made sure at the very beginning to have an exhaustive list.
Do you draw any relationship lines between threats and invariants? Is that something you think about?
There's a lot of relationships that go into threats, and I used to in the past, when I started a threat model, I would start with a outlining what are all the assets, who are all the actors, what are the threat boundaries, and some of these things are related to invariance, right? Like, what are the conditions, or what are the parameters of something's execution? I think there is definitely value in breaking things down. At a certain level, though, as an auditor, a lot of threats, especially if you do it for a while, they become sort of intuitive. I do think that for the most part, auditors will have certain like threat vocabulary, right? And when they start an audit, immediately they're going to know, okay, all these threats apply because this is a DeFi project, it touches NFTs, it uses this ERC or something. But when you think about doing the like heavy hitting security research, finding these 0 days, how do these people find it? Like, maybe sure they get lucky and they stumble upon it when they're testing something, but people that are intentionally looking for that, they are looking at sort of the invariance of an application. They might do like kind of formal verification or contract execution simulation or something, a symbolic execution, to kind of explore the paths that things can take. They're kind of threats that are hard to put into words, right? Like, what if this one variable, what if it overflowed into this like other chunk of memory and caused some weird behavior? I don't know what that behavior might be, but I'm gonna sort of explore it. So I think you can look at it in invariance, and you can look at the assumptions you're making, and I think those can lead you to threats. But I also think that after you've identified a threat, it's really important to, or you've identified that a threat is not a vulnerability, right? And you're kind of moving on. It's really important to also describe what invariance that kind of depends upon and what assumptions you've made that depends upon. So you know, like, okay, if the developer ever changes how this mechanism works, then there will be a vulnerability. And I think that's a spot where a lot of people get caught, is they get an audit, it's fine, they change one small thing, maybe they don't re-audit it, or the re-audit doesn't consider the whole scope of the first audit, and suddenly there's a vulnerability now.
Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense. What do you think are the main differences between Web2 threat modeling and Web3 threat modeling?
The biggest difference is just Web3 is, when you're talking about smart contracts, is just 100% application security, and Web2, it's a nice blend of different things. Like, you have to think about the transport layer of HTTPS and TLS, and the storage layer of the database, and the user and their experience, and the front end, and all these things married together, comprise web app security. And then you look at smart contracts, and it's just purely code and what the code's doing. That's the biggest difference. As an AppSec guy, I kind of like it. But then the downside is a lot of people are not looking at their security in a holistic manner, and things like operational security, infrastructure, security, and like key management. Sometimes people kind of ne neglect those things because they're not part of the core security bucket for them. They don't get those things reviewed, and that's where we get these hacks, like the Ronin Bridge, for example.
I know you did some, or still do, I'm not sure, some operational security reviews. So, what should be taken into account when trying to get your operational security to the max level? What are the things you're looking to, and how can a company improve on this aspect?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is treat operational security like anything else and just give it some thought. A lot of operational security is, it's just common sense, really. It's, don't click links from someone that, don't click links that, that from someone you don't trust. Right, don't open a PDF from an external email, things like that. But also know that if all of your developers have access to the production release of of your product, of your database, then that's a big issue. One of those developers could be compromised, or they could be malicious one day, and suddenly all of your whole project is totally compromised. So definitely just use your common sense and sit down and actually think about it for a few days. And then I think that what I always recommend to people is there should always be one person internal in any company or group or project that it's kind of their job to own security. So elect one person to do that. It doesn't have to be like 100% of their job or even 50%. It could be 10% of their job. Like once every 2 weeks, they just think about what are our security challenges, what could go wrong. Let me find those problems and solve them. Like that really goes a long way.
Yeah, when you put it like it's just common sense, it really shines a light on just how careless projects are and just how much room for improvement there is into like standardized practices and tools that just kind of make it much easier to follow common sense in a way. Because sometimes, I don't know, you might be tired and you receive an email like, oh, what is this PDF? And then boom, you're toast. So is that something you think you could also touch in the, or not touch, but address with the tool at some point?
It's a good question. I think potentially, yeah. We want to be this like holistic platform, and once we've really solved all the problems in application security, we'll look to branch out into others. No idea what the time horizon is there, and as I said, there's so much to build with what we currently want to do that we may never get there, right? The list seems to grow and grow and never get shorter of things we want to add. So we'll see what the future holds.
Yeah, and speaking of time horizon, when do you think you're officially going to launch?
Yeah, so I think at this point we put our beta out around 2 months ago. And that was definitely a big jump from the alpha that we had had out since February. I don't know if you had the chance to check it out, but it was pretty nascent compared to what we have now. But the beta was really not about new features as much as it was about stability improvements. And so when we look at our prod release, which we're thinking early next year in the spring, there's a lot more features, that we're going to add, and we're really excited about it. But yeah, early next spring is when we plan to launch that.
Can you translate that into regular months for people outside of the US? Because I have no idea when next spring is for you.
Fair enough. I think in March of next year.
Okay, cool. Yes, got it. And one thing that I was curious about as well is because you're using ChatGPT 4, how do you guys pay for it as people use it? It just comes out of your budget at the moment?
We're carrying the auditing community in our backs right now for their AI usage.
Well, guys, thank you for coming by. It's been a pleasure. I'm really excited to see the new features and all the innovative things you guys have to have coming out of the gates. So yeah, thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, it was fun.